An FAA whistleblower explains how he paid the price. United woos both U.S. Airways and Continental. And American Airlines says all those groundings were unnecessary. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, May 6th, 2008. In the recent FAA scandal involving oversight of airline maintenance, two FAA inspectors sought whistleblower protection in order to tell Congress what was going on. The inspectors said the FAA was too cozy with the airlines and that inspectors who spoke out faced disciplinary action. As ANN reported, FAA Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill announced on April 2nd that the agency was making changes to enable inspectors to raise their concerns quickly and at a higher level. But that won't come in time to help Gabe Bruno. Bruno retired in January 2006 from the FAA's Southern Region office in Florida after 29 years with the agency. Earlier, Bruno oversaw the ValueJet-Airtran merger in the period following the 1996 ValueJet crash near Miami. NTSB found a lack of FAA oversight was one of the accident's contributing factors. Bruno attempted to implement necessary oversight to prevent a recurrence. Bruno says he fought for years to get the necessary personnel to perform proper inspection of the growing airline. When he brought his concerns to his two immediate supervisors in May of 2001, he was reassigned from his management position. Bruno tells WKMG-TV in Orlando that before that reassignment, he had demanded the retesting of certificated airframe and power plant mechanics who had received their certificates from designated mechanic examiner Anthony St. George at Sanford Orlando International Airport. St. George was convicted in 1999 of taking bribes to provide certificates to applicants without requiring them to pass required tests, and he wound up in prison for it. Bruno wanted all 2,000 mechanics who'd been signed off by St. George retested. Of the roughly 1,000 who were, 75% failed. But when Bruno was reassigned, that testing stopped, which he says left another 1,000 mechanics out there with certificates obtained fraudulently. Eventually, they were given only written and oral tests, but not the hands-on practical test they should have been required to pass in the first place to get their certificates. Bruno, who endured 9 months without pay and a settlement with the FAA which included a demotion and a pay cut, says that resolution of the problem essentially decriminalizes the same offense that sent Anthony St. George to prison. Now retired, Bruno says he'll keep fighting. Quote, "I'm trying to do this to do the best I can do to bring corrective actions about and to try to hopefully get the FAA in the place where it needs to be," unquote. They're back! The unnamed sources close to the talks, that is. They're telling the Wall Street Journal UAL Corp could announce a merger between United Airlines and U.S. Airways within 10 days. The two sides have reportedly identified $1.5 billion in cost savings over continuing as independent airlines. The voices are also saying that United is still trying to convince Continental to merge with United instead of pursuing a marketing alliance with American Airlines and British Airways. As ANN reported, Continental spurned United's advances on April 27th after United reported losing $500 million in the first quarter of 2008. United's pilots have come out against a merger with U.S. Airways, pointing to that carrier's failure to clean up the pilot workforce integration mess it created when it merged with America West 3 years ago. We'll keep you posted. The recent groundings of more than 3,300 American Airlines flights ruined vacations, weddings, graduations, and other plans for over 300,000 passengers. It came after Congress heard whistleblowers accuse the FAA of becoming too cozy with the airlines it regulates, and industry analysts accused FAA Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill of a political knee-jerk that had little to do with real safety issues. Sturgill's boss, Transportation Secretary Mary Peters, told the FAA and American she wanted written explanations from both sides on her desk within 2 weeks. We're not sure what the FAA's story is, but American reportedly says it believed it had a handshake agreement with FAA managers in the region that outlined a scheduled plan for airworthiness directive compliance on its fleet of MD-80 aircraft without disrupting passengers. The Wall Street Journal reports American charges FAA headquarters overruled its regional managers and moved forward with a more aggressive plan that blindsided the airline. American has also accused the FAA of changing a long-standing policy of letting experienced airline maintenance personnel decide how to resolve ambiguities in airworthiness directives. Secretary Peters recently reinforced that attempts to improve accountability should not needlessly disrupt passengers. NASA, which was criticized a few months ago for rewarding contractors with extravagant parties and cruises, is under fire again, this time for letting employees use government-issued purchase cards to buy personal items and disregard competitive bidding rules. The expose by the Houston Chronicle on Sunday was careful to point out that most of the 451,000 transactions it reviewed were purchases from vendors which appear to sell legitimate business items. But the paper says that among the $265 million in charges made between 2004 and 2007, it also found iPods, video games, and jewelry. Some of the data was found in records provided to the paper by NASA. The paper also notes the agency's own auditors have brought purchase card abuses to light in at least five previous internal reports dating back to 1997. The Bush administration has ordered federal agencies to tighten internal controls on the use of government purchase cards. Bill McNally, NASA's assistant administrator for procurement, says an internal review will be complete by midsummer. NASA is hardly alone. The Chronicle's review comes at a time when Congress is considering tightening purchase card regulations, following a federal report last month which found widespread abuse of the card programs. Congressman Nick Lampson is a Democrat whose district includes the Johnson Space Center. He's been a proponent of better funding for NASA. He calls the purchase card scandal an affront to the majority of space agency employees and is calling for harsh punishments. Quote, "We should be outraged. Everybody should be. Clearly, we have not done enough." Keeping tabs on all those cards out there is a daunting task. NASA says more than 3,200 of its employees have used them to make purchases between 2004 and 2007. The cards are the functional equivalent of credit cards, but instead of the user getting a bill and submitting it for reimbursement, the bills go directly to and are paid directly by the federal government. And the harsh punishments that Congressman Lampson wants are few and far between. Out of at least 160 cases of card abuse referred to NASA investigators since the start of fiscal 2007, only 25 have resulted in disciplinary action. Most cases are small, but last year, Kennedy Space Center employee Elizabeth Ann Osborne pleaded guilty to using her NASA purchase card to buy $157,000 in personal items, including clothing, jewelry, a $2,000 air conditioning installation at her home, and at least $13,000 in electronics. A more subtle abuse is buying costly items which should be procured through competitive bidding by breaking the price down into smaller chunks and paying with multiple swipes of the purchase card. The Chronicle reported finding about 4,600 cases in which that happened. Under current law, any federal purchase over $3,000 must go through a competitive bid process. Up next on ANN, the NTSB wants to know, what is the real stall speed of the Zlin Savage? Lockheed tells allies, buy your F-35 now and save. And EAA says it will honor the 30,000th home built at Oshkosh this year. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the suit, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 6th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. The National Transportation Safety Board says improper arc markings on the airspeed indicator of a Zlin Savage light sport aircraft contributed to the August 2007 loss of the plane near Mosquero, New Mexico. Two people on board died in that accident. According to the board's probable cause report, failure to maintain adequate airspeed killed pilot Jeffrey Lane and passenger Ryan Hartley. The wreckage displayed evidence of a stall spin, and data recovered from the Garmin GPS 396 corroborated that. The board also noted the aircraft's airspeed indicator displayed a white arc extending from 36 through 71 miles per hour. The airspeeds section of the aircraft's operating manual lists the range as 31 through 69, while the performance section of the flight manual lists a stall speed of 38 miles per hour. NTSB cited reports from several pilots who said they experienced stall conditions in the Zlin Savage at speeds as high as 58 miles per hour in smooth air with wings level. Other Zlin Savage owners and pilots dispute that, saying the aircraft is docile at low speeds. Lane's logbook showed over 3,400 hours flight time, with at least 5 hours in the accident airplane. 8 months before the crash, Lane had completed a flight review at Flight Safety International. Hoping to show support for its upcoming F-35 Lightning II advanced fighter and bring some much-needed outside capital into the program, which is significantly over budget, Lockheed Martin has asked key allies to place early orders for the plane. The aircraft, which is also known as the Joint Strike Fighter, is still in early development with one test plane flying, but Lockheed is working on a detailed plan showing cost, order, and delivery schedules for the plane in the hopes of drawing orders to the program and away from foreign competitors, including the Eurofighter Typhoon and Saab's updated Gripen. The plan is common for commercial aircraft producers like Boeing, but would place additional pressure on Lockheed and its prime contractors to complete the F-35 on schedule. Early orders should also drive down purchase and production costs, which would make the plane far more attractive to Pentagon weapons purchasers considering their own orders for the F-35. So far, Great Britain and the Netherlands are expected to purchase 3 F-35 test planes between them, with the U.S. signing on for 16 aircraft in fiscal 2009. None of the other development partners have yet committed to actually buy the plane. Lockheed Executive VP Tom Burbage says Lockheed made strong proposals to weapons buyers from Denmark, Norway, and the Netherlands last month. Those countries are also considering the Swedish-made Gripen. Burbage adds, quote, "We're competitive on price and we're a much more capable airplane," unquote. A formal government review last week found the Pentagon endangered classified military technology by failing to monitor security safeguards at a British subcontractor working on the F-35 program. A report issued by the Department of Defense Inspector General alleges flaws in oversight of British contractor BAE Systems. The Orlando Sentinel reports the gap took place over at least a 2-year period starting in 2004, during which classified technical data and other secure information could have been compromised. The report also noted the review couldn't evaluate security for 3 years prior because the Defense Security Service put in place an unauthorized policy to discard security reports after 2 years. Lockheed Martin told the Associated Press it knows of no sensitive information that has been compromised because of the issues raised in the Inspector General's report. The Experimental Aircraft Association says the home-built movement is fast approaching 30,000 amateur-built aircraft certificated in the United States. That milestone will be celebrated, surprise, at EAA Air Venture Oshkosh this summer. During the week of July 28th through August 3rd, EAA will choose an aircraft from among those flown to Whitman Regional Airport to officially honor as the 30,000th home built. Charlie Becker, who is EAA's Director of Member Programs, says the count now stands at 29,800. Quote, "We checked with the FAA, and it is impossible to determine just which aircraft will be the 30,000th. This is a huge milestone for the home built movement, and EAA could not let this milestone go by unnoticed, so we've created another way to recognize this major achievement," unquote. To be eligible, your home-built aircraft must be flown to the event, certificated in the amateur-built category in 2008, registered at Home Builders Headquarters no later than Tuesday, July 29th, and the owner must be present on Wednesday and Thursday, July 30th and 31st. The honorary 30,000th home-built will be selected on Tuesday evening in a random drawing from among the eligible aircraft. A special display will showcase the honorary aircraft on Aeroshell Square on Wednesday and Thursday, and the owner will accept a special award on behalf of all home builders from the FAA. Both the aircraft and its owner will also be honored at the annual Home Builders Dinner on Thursday evening. Still ahead, Bonhomme edges out Mangold in San Diego's Red Bull event. A Scottish couple turns a Convair 440 into a B&B. And NASA wants to send insert name here to the moon. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, May 6th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. The fierce competition between British pilot Paul Bonhomme and American pilot Mike Mangold came to a head in San Diego Sunday as Bonhomme claimed his second win of the 2008 Red Bull Air Race World Series season in front of 63,000 spectators. The Brit also won the San Diego event last year, but lost the overall series to Mangold by a heartbreaking fraction of a second. He won Sunday's final with a time of 1 minute 18.01 seconds. That's about 1.25 seconds ahead of Mangold, who took second place. Bonhomme said of the course, quote, "It's a challenging track. You have to be consistent in every session all the time. Today we saw some tight flying, and I had to work very hard to get this spot," unquote. Bonhomme currently leads the World Series with 18 points. Mangold is second with 15 points. Two-day spectator attendance in San Diego was estimated at 120,000. The next stop in the series is Detroit on May 31st and June 1st. If half the fun is getting there, then what happens when the method to get there becomes the destination? That's what a Scottish couple intends to find out as they restore an American airliner from the 1950s into a luxury bed and breakfast, catering to travelers seeking a getaway that harkens back to the romance of the airlines. BBC reports Tricia and Andrew Scott came across the 1959 Convair 440 Metropolitan while searching for a static fighter plane to use as a business gimmick for Mr. Scott's plant nursery. They found a much larger Convair, inspiring Tricia to think about turning it into a restaurant or coffee shop. Once they saw the inside, the couple decided it would be perfect as a small hotel. The Convair 440 design was an update on the Convair 240, which was conceived as a replacement for the Douglas DC-3 in the years after World War II. The 440 added extra cabin soundproofing, weather radar, and aerodynamic improvements. The first Convair 440 was flown on October 6, 1955. The Scots purchased the aircraft for £10,000, that's roughly $20,000 U.S. Having been grounded years ago by an engine fire, the plane had to be transported by ground, which reportedly cost another £20,000, or double the purchase price. The couple hopes to recoup their investment at the rate of £400 per night. You'll enjoy an airline-themed room designed by Gary Doy of Design Q of London, and have the option of dressing up as a flight attendant or a pilot. Andrew told BBC, quote, "I hope John Travolta finds out about the plane. I'd be interested to hear what he thinks about it. Our houses are quite similar now, as we both have two planes outside our homes," unquote. NASA is inviting people of all ages to join the Lunar Exploration Journey, with an opportunity to send their names to the moon aboard the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. The Send Your Name to the Moon website lets you submit your information, print a certificate, and have your name entered into a database. That database will be placed on a microchip that will be integrated into the spacecraft. The deadline for submitting names is June 27th. Kathy Petty, Deputy Project Manager for LRO at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, calls it a way to become part of the next wave of lunar explorers. Quote, "The LRO mission is the first step in NASA's plans to return humans to the moon by 2020, and your name can reach there first. How cool is that?" Unquote. You'll find a link to the sign-up page at the bottom of the print version of this story on our website at www.aero-news.net. I'd just tell you the URL directly, but as Mom might have said, the government can put a man on the moon, but they can't pick a URL that's not a mile long. And finally, the FAA is investigating the cause of an engine failure, which resulted in the forced landing of a Piper Cherokee last week on final approach to William P. Hobby Airport, southeast of Houston, Texas. KHOU-TV News reports three fishing buddies were returning from Port Lavaca on Tuesday night when things suddenly got quiet. The plane came down hard enough to break off the nose gear and crumple the fuselage. No one was injured in the hard landing, but unfortunately a cooler carried in the plane spilled the day's catch on one of the men. Georgette McGuire told KHOU it was her boyfriend who was sitting in the plane's back seat when the cooler went over. Quote, "Crabs went all over him, just biting him left and right. He said it was driving him crazy. He's got a bunch of crab bites on him," unquote. No, I'm not going to make the joke here. I like to leave the easy ones for you. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I just had to ask Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation, transportation policy advisor to the last four U.S. administrations, why it is President Bush feels so strongly about user fees that he'd threaten a veto of Senate Bill 1300 if it passes without them. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.